Yeah, well, listeners, Daniel Frazier is our guest for today, and he runs the Pharmacy Burger in Nashville, and we were talking a little Nashville before we started the recording. But he's been in just about every position you could imagine in the restaurant industry, and he has a lot of information, which seems like it started with what's his name's thing, Confidential, Kitchen Confidential, and showed how interested people are in what really goes on in restaurants. And having been in the industry for a long time, I'd say it's probably justified interest because there's a lot that goes on in restaurants that you as a customer wouldn't necessarily see. Is that a correct statement, Daniel?
Yeah, I'd say so. Restaurants are a lot more involved, and there's obviously a lot of moving parts, and it's probably very often different than people's expectations are. The big one is, and we get this. We make burgers are our main thing, but people don't understand kind of like the challenge it can be to make burgers for 100 people. It's like.
Yeah.
People think of they think about grilling out and making about 12 burgers isn't all that hard, but making 100 burgers is a whole different, kettle of fish.
Now, how did you end up in now? Are you born and raised in Nashville?
So I was born in Cleveland, Tennessee, which is just outside of Chattanooga. That's where my parents
Okay.
met and went to college at Lee University, but we moved up to Smyrna, which is a suburb of Nashville. When I was about six. So then I lived in the Nashville sort of, the greater Nashville area, but basically most of my life before moving up into the actual city in 2010. So after I graduated college, went to MTSU, Middle Tennessee State University, which is in Murfreesboro. But after I graduated, I moved in and was doing the whole music thing before getting absorbed by
Oh,
the
so
restaurant world.
that's why. Okay, that's why you selected Nashville. What kind of
It is,
music did you do?
So I mostly indie rock stuff. So sort of
Oh.
alternative rock music. Yeah. Made a couple records and had a lot of fun.
Well, that's certainly a place where you should have been, is Nashville, I guess.
Absolutely, great. It's a great music town.
Now, is most of your experience in this the pharmacy burger, and why that name?
Yeah, so that's where most of my restaurant experience is, and I've really enjoyed my time there. But the name comes from so the partners that started the pharmacy had done a project together in a building adjacent to where the pharmacy is now on 731 McFerrin, called the Holland House, which was a kind of upscale speakeasy cocktail bar. And this was in 2010, so. That speakeasy style was really like just kind of coming back. I mean, you probably had some in LA and New York and Chicago and some a little more trend forward areas, but
Yeah.
there really wasn't anything like that in Nashville. So they did that. And they had a lot of success. It was very popular, but they wanted something a little more family friendly. So something a little more neighborhood that would kind of appeal to anyone. So burgers were felt like an obvious choice. Well, when they were doing the build out, they found a bunch of old pill bottles, realizing there was an old pharmacy. At some point
Oh.
on the property, they were like old, real old brown pill bottles. So they were like that kind of gave the inspiration. So we have a an actual 1950s soda jet rail that's been refurbished and repaired and maintained. So it's got a laser stream on one side, a slower flow on the other, so that you can mix handmade sodas. We make our
Yeah,
syrups in
right.
house and have a whole rail. And then, back in the day at the pharmacy, you'd go get your prescription filled, but you'd also get a soda made. You'd also go get you could get a burger. They'd have a little grill behind the counter. So we don't our grill isn't behind the bar as those would be. We have a kitchen. And so we've sort of mingled two ideas there where one, you've got that soda parlor, which is where the pharmacy comes from, but at our flagship location in East it's sort of a tavern style inside, and then we've got a large outdoor beer garden. So we're kind of bringing in that wonderful, comfortable Americana with some old world German and European, outdoor beer drinking, and we make and smoke our own sausages as well. So there's sort of a collaboration of ideas there that we think mix really well.
Now, do you have one, or is it a mini chain or something?
So not many, but we do have three, which we're very happy with. So we've got the main location in East. Then there's a QSR model in the 5th and Broad development at the Assembly Food Hall, which is right on Broadway downtown. And it's a counter service style, different format, but we've really enjoyed being there. You're directly across from the Ryman and the Bridgestone, so it's great for events, but it's been a lot of fun being in there. That Assembly Food Hall got voted best food hall in the nation earlier this year. So
oh, really?
It's been a privilege to be a part of it, and also to be we like to believe a part of why it's been successful. And so that's been awesome. And then the other location is in the B&A Airport. So we're there supporting and, uplifting the local options at the airport. And that's been a lot of fun, too. We also got voted the best restaurant in the B&A Airport just last month, which was really wonderful.
Great. Now, what motivated you to write this? Did you find out that people were really curious about what really goes on in restaurants? I don't mean write it. I mean you consult. Define just kind of what you do. You talk to people, you consult with them about what experiences
yeah.
and restaurants.
So I think it's great to hear to share the stories of what's going on in restaurants. And so I enjoy talking about both my experience and the experiences me and my team have had over the different times, and it's also selfishly I enjoy talking, so there's always that point. It's always great to have conversations. So
is Sean Brock still there?
So he's not with us, but he is in the city still. He actually, I believe he was a patron in our bar not too long ago. One of my bartenders notified us they saw him in the building, but yeah, he's there. He's got several. I know one of his concepts that he just opened, they shut doors there, but I know he's got several others that are doing quite well.
Yeah, I mean, we've known him since his Charleston days. We've got to know him pretty well through that. And then we've been to his restaurant in Nashville, too.
Yes.
And when we were last there covering that music and festival music and food and wine or whatever, it seemed to me that at that time all these Yankee chefs were moving into the city. Is that still the case?
So Nashville is a transplant city, so you get a lot of people from all over coming and enjoying the vibe and the energy of the city, or I like to think that they're kindred spirits kind of being drawn or finding a home, but yeah, you do get a lot of people. I mean, we've got we got French restaurants opening and some other things too, even from all the way, all the way across the pond there. So it's all sorts. That being said, there are still locals doing things or people with more regional southern roots, but yeah, we've just seen an explosion of growth, restaurants specifically. In the city, not to, let alone all the high rises and crazy amount of apartment buildings going up.
Well, I think that it's, from my experience, it's a city that is kind of constantly reinventing itself. I mean, it's what do you call that? It's constantly changing.
Yeah,
and
no,
redoing
it is.
Things.
It's,
but I don't know why.
Well, I think part of it is that Nashville was a pretty small town for a long time. It really, there was a downtown strip, and that was about it. And even that strip back in the, you don't have to go that long ago, 30, 40 years ago, there really wasn't a lot going on. So on the one hand, we've got a lot of room to grow. It does get hot here, but overall, people joke that we don't get four seasons, but we do. So there's that weather component, which matters a lot to people these days. So that's pleasant.
Oh, yeah.
And then from there, And then from there, people also, Nashvillians love to complain about the traffic, but compared to some other similar sized cities, it's really not that bad. And you can get around. But on top of that, while Nashville has a culture in itself, there's a lot of unique neighborhoods that you can feel at home in, but from the east side to west Nashville and 12th South, and downtown's its own thing, north Nashville's its own thing. So,
when we were covering the festival, we got invited to some private parties, and so we got to see private properties, some of them pretty elaborate, I must say. There's money in Nashville.
There is, and it's coming into the city too. People who've been here a long time, you'll hear complaints about things changing, things not being like it used to be, and there's some truth to that. There's some truth to it, but at the same time, there's also a lot more options, and there's a lot more options for families. It's not all one thing, and there are. There's more grocery stores. I mean, it's like there's literal practical things that are actually pretty nice for your life. But at the same time, change is change. And if you've got something you like and it changes, sometimes it feels like a loss, even though the new thing is good.
Well, our son's best friend and his wife and three children live in Nashville. I haven't kept up with it very much. But she's... I guess we know people from Nashville because of the medical stuff. I mean, she's a doc.
Yes.
And I guess that's a big attraction. But now, what do you find is the biggest misconception people have about the restaurant industry?
That's a great, great question. That's a great, great question. I want to be thoughtful about it. I alluded to it earlier, and this is going to differ restaurant to restaurant a little bit, but I really think people don't understand what it takes to go in to feed as many people as it is. It is just, you have a dinner party. Obviously, I mean, some people have experienced this. If you feed your family of four, or you're eating with you and a partner, or you and a friend, or just yourself. It's very easy to execute, relatively, depending on the techniques and the recipe you're using. It's pretty easy to execute it. It changes when you take that from 4 to 12. You're obviously tripling the food and the amount of space. It makes a big difference. When you take that number from 12 to 50 or 100, it is just a world of difference in preparation. And I think a lot of people, like when they think about a restaurant, if they've not worked in one, you just sort of imagine cooking at your house and just sort of, okay, whatever. And or if they're familiar with some of your larger chains, which, no disparaging, a lot of those places are cooking pre-made things out of bags. And there's a level of ease of execution, which makes sense for them at their scale. But it's totally different if you're working in a scratch kitchen where they're making everything, they're prepping everything. And again, to do that at a high volume or at a really high level in your fine dining places, even if their overall headcounts aren't huge, to still execute a really high quality food, that people really just don't understand how challenging it can be to do that and to do it well every time. People pay us for it, so they don't need to we appreciate when they're grateful, so it's all good there. But I'm often surprised. It's like when you take a step back, even though I've worked at the pharmacy and worked in restaurants for a long time now, when you take a step back, it's kind of amazing it ever works. The way I feel sometimes. It's such a niche machine. Even going from the door to being sat to a server taking care of you, and the order coming back now through technology. Now we've got wireless handheld orders being placed. It pops up on a screen in the kitchen. And then they cook and make your food while also making the food for 30 to 40 to 50 other people. And the fact that food comes out hot and good and tasty, it's like, and we're able to do it all the time. It's like, and again, that's the experience you go to a lot of places. Sure, people have bad experiences from time to time. But
well, you
overall,
know, we're kind
you,
of at a turning point as far as from my perspective. As you know, I have a lot of experience with the restaurant industry.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
from my perspective, that we're at a crossroads. And first of all, the labor shortage has hit
Mm-hmm.
the restaurant industry like nothing ever before, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the
Yeah.
second thing is, when I talk to chefs, and well, any managers as well too. People now are so alert to things like allergies that the whole concept of a menu has changed because everybody wants everything customized. They can't
Yes.
eat it. I mean, I've heard people say they're allergic to garlic.
Well, no, you're that's absolutely right. There are heightened sensibilities, obviously, from your gluten intolerance and celiac, and then people also just having preferences like
vegetarian,
vegan,
allergies or something. And so,
basically, yes.
It's a very stressful environment, I think.
Oh no, it is, and again, like you said, you have something, you make it a certain way. You try to build flexibility and offerings into different people. And one of the things that's funny is we've got a burger that we serve topped with black beans and guacamole, and we also have a black bean burger with a black bean patty, and they're not even in the same side of the menu, so they're pretty hard to distinguish. But occasionally, someone who doesn't eat meat will order the one topped with black beans just out of confusion.
Geez.
And I know, and again, you almost want to preface sometimes. It's like, do you not eat meat? But you can't ask every customer if they don't eat meat. You're at a burger joint. You know, it's like, it's one of those things that's silly, but, you know, and then people get mad like it's your fault somehow. And it's just sort of funny.
Yeah.
But again, it's just like, it feels sometimes like critical thinking is just at an all-time low, and people kind of want things spoon-fed to them, and everything's supposed to be someone else's fault. And that's just it's just kind of the way things are going. And that also, like you said, it influences the workforce where, you know, there's a shortage, and especially during the sort of pandemic COVID years, there was a massive shortage of people available and wanting to work. And thankfully some of that stuff's gotten better. Thankfully also we had a relatively smooth go through that process.
Mm-hmm.
I think because we try to be a people first business, because if you're, you know, it's really important to have a high level of expectations of quality and friendliness and hospitality from your staff. But if your staff's really not in a good place, if they're not thriving, if they're not happy, it's really going to be hard for them to do a good job all the time. So we try to be people first. There's not, you can't do everything, but if they're excited to come into work, then that you've already basically won, you know, you've really got half the way there. So making a real invested team environment, it's easier said than done, but that's half the battle.
What do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard job. The schedule is is outrageous. The level of energy you have to bring to it is, again, it's not even normal. there's a lot of bitching and moaning and complaining and all this stuff that goes on. What is the one thing that keeps you attached to this industry that you love?
So there's really no better feeling when you've made a guest happy. And when you eat a great meal, it's the best moment of your day. And I say this to my staff all the time, that taking care of someone and really – really reveling in the enjoyment that they get from the fellowship at the table, from the hospitality that they've received, and then the food that they've eaten. It is an addictive feeling. And there are times, especially when the weather's nice, cause we have a large outdoor area where, you know, it'll be full. We've got some great, wonderful music going, and I'll just have to tell my wife, hey, I'm not coming home for a little bit, so I'm just going to soak this in. It's just so pleasurable to be around people enjoying themselves. And it is like, it's just great. And
it's like a
so
drug.
I try to always, it really is.
It's
really,
an addiction.
Really,
I mean, I think it's a consequential addiction. I mean,
yeah.
The restaurant industry.
No, I think, yeah, it is. It is. And then it's, you know, there's always problems to solve. There's always things to do. So it's you know, it's a challenge to get bored. You just got to get used to doing the same things a lot, which is, I guess, its own, can be its own form of boredom. But all that being said, it's, yeah, it's pretty magical when it's working. It's magical. Obviously, we all know, and we've all been there. When it's not working, it's the worst thing ever. But
I can recall some of my very worst moments.
Having owned
run a restaurant. I can tell you,
It'll get you when it's not there. Yeah, it'll get you when it's not there.
Well, listen, I think that Daniel Frazier from the Pharmacy Burger, I hope that that many of our current listeners will come your way to Nashville.
Yeah.
And stop and say hey, huh?
Yeah, I would love that. We would love to take care of you, and if you're coming to the airport, you can grab us there. But we'd especially love to see you. Come sit down, eat with us at the East Nashville location on 731 McFerrin. Or if you're downtown, if you're going to be bebopping around and hitting up the honky tonks, you know, head up just past Fifth Avenue, go up to the Fifth and Broad Assembly Food Hall and grab a burger. And there's lots of other great options. We work alongside in that food hall space, which is really cool. So then, you know, if you're hankering a burger, but your friend wants some hot chicken or something else there, you know, there's options to facilitate that. So yeah, we'd absolutely love to take care of people. That's really, yeah. Restaurants about taking care of people.
One of my pet peeves is kale salad.
Okay.
I mean, I was raised on kale, but you know, because you could grow it so easily in the garden.
Sure.
But I never had one kale salad I liked until I ate it at what's his name from New York, New York Chef Rabbit. His restaurant in Nashville had the best kale salad.
Best kale salad you've ever had. Okay, I'll have to check that out. Look up the kale salad. Oh, that's so funny.
Who?
That was the guy. He thought that he'd maybe he wasn't doing Nashville anymore. I can't recall his name.
Yeah, well, he's back in New York. So, but anyhow, all right, Daniel. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us, and I hope you keep enjoying your career.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I had a blast, and this was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to many more good years.
Great. Well, maybe we'll stop and see you. Good to talk to you.
Please do. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Yes, listeners, we're talking to Samantha Sherman. She has a catchy name for her company and product, but we really like that a lot, Natural Blonde Mix. You might start out, Samantha, by explaining why this is blonde.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for asking me to speak with you today. Natural Blonde Mix started with the idea of making a better Bloody Mary mix using yellow tomatoes. So we thought a fun little take on red versus yellow would be redheaded versus blonde. And so it really kind of just captures our beautiful golden yellow tomatoes that we use for our mix.
They are nice. And yellow tomatoes are naturally less acidic, right?
That's true. Yeah. So the flavor profile of a yellow tomato has less acidity. It also has less of that tomato, heavy tomato paste flavor you might associate with a red tomato. So it's a little bit more sweet, a little bit more delicate, and it's just an overall pleasant flavor.
Now, where do they get grown?
Sure. So we have farms that grow our beautiful golden yellow tomatoes along the North and South Carolina borders, as well as a farm in Florida that's now doing about 7 acres of tomatoes.
Now, you started off very small, and you're now nationwide, right?
That's correct, yeah. So this began about 10 or 11 years ago, really as a side project. The gentleman who started the company sold it as a, or was selling it at farmers markets, and from there it has just grown.
Well, you sure have a star-studded cast of leaders to your company. I mean, I've never seen so much experience in a a small company.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny too, because we, as a small company, we're really a family-run business. So you might not be able to tell from all of our names, but we have my stepfather, who is the CEO of the company, John Grabner, and he ran a really successful business up in Cleveland, Ohio, for a long time before selling it and deciding to do something exciting and different. And then my stepbrother, Scott Grabner, has phenomenal sales experience. He's our VP of sales. We have Brandy Lynch, who is incredible when it comes to sales and client relations. And yeah, we're just a wonderful team. And we have some wonderful people working with us. We have Tim Coughlin, who worked at Nestle for
I noticed that.
Yeah. And then,
Now, why did you pick, I mean, there's a whole, not company, but a whole institution that does nothing but rate Bloody Mary mixes. I mean, you didn't have to get into a business where the competition was so intense. Why this?
Yeah, so that's a great point. I think when you look at the market, it's quite saturated with mixes that are pretty much the same. It's red tomatoes. It leaves you feeling, most mixes leave you feeling like you've had a big bowl of soup. And our product is distinctly different. Not only do we use this beautiful golden yellow tomato, which gives it a delicate, refreshing flavor, but we also press our juice rather than using reconstituted tomato paste with water. And what that does is it creates a mix that feels light and refreshing in your stomach. So while you might go into, you know, to a brunch and have one Bloody Mary, and then you feel full after, our Bloody Mary is so light and refreshing that you'll go back for number two and three easily. And quite frankly, I drink it as a breakfast juice without anything in it. I just drink, it's non-alcoholic
mix.
Yeah, I like
this too.
I drink it. Yeah, it's nice.
Like
it's a nice, bright, sunshiny morning to start your day with.
My mother, who she's deceased at this point, but I mean a long time ago, but when she lived with us, she used to grow yellow tomatoes as well as red tomatoes, but she used to make fresh tomato juice that we used in the Bloody Marys, and it was fantastic.
And with due respect to your product, my mother-in-law's juice tomato was sent from heaven. it was so wonderful. The only tragedy was it ran out of quantity fairly quickly.
Right. Because
it tasted so wonderful. Now I have a new way, which is using your tomatoes. Using the powder, I guess. Is that the right way to describe it? And then mixing that into water. And lo and behold, you have a very, very tasty Bloody Mary. And I'm puzzled about the blonde thing. So you can tell us about the blonde thing as well when you get to that.
Yeah, certainly. So that is our primary difference. If you look at the label on most Bloody Mary mixes on the market, whether it's Zing Zang, Mr. and Mrs. T's, McClure's, they are all tomato paste and water. And our mix, when you look at it, is just tomato juice. We take those tomatoes, we crush and press them to extract all of the juice. We don't add water to it. There is a little bit of spicy pickle juice that gets added in to give it a little extra flavor. And so what you're really drinking is you're drinking real tomatoes rather than, a mixture or a cocktail, or not a cocktail, but a chemistry set is what we like to say. And then the blonde is really, it just is a funny take on a lighter version. So when you look at a market like beer, for example, where you have pale ales and you have blondes and you have IPAs, the blonde is always a lighter, more refreshing version of any of the different beer mixes. And so we're just kind of the same, but just with tomatoes.
Right. Now, Anne thought there was some magic about the word rimmer. Is that right?
No.
Rimmer.
You included, you also make rimmers. And the rimmers it's salt, which is what goes with Bloody Marys, right?
That's correct. So we have our Salty Blonde. That is the companion to our Golden Mary and our Spicy Mary. Those are our mixes. And while the rimmer is intended to be a salt rimmer for a cocktail glass, we also find that our customers really love to use it in other applications. So whether that's a customer saying, hey, I just use that as a seasoning for my grilled chicken, or my personal favorite is throwing it into a bag of Lay's potato chips and shaking it all up. And then we even have people say, I put it on my popcorn that I freshly make in my kitchen, or, I use it in my soup.
Well, you know,
it's a great seasoning.
I have a trainer. I've had her for probably 20 years. And she was desperate. I don't know why. She was having some kind of a party, and she needed a rimmer, and she didn't have time to go get one. I said, wait a minute, I have one. No, I don't know what
she
was.
What did you
think about it? Huh? I just
what
wanted
did you
to,
think about it?
I mean, I had a rimmer. I wasn't sure how I was going to use it. But she needed one desperately, and I said, I have one. So she didn't have time to go shopping around to find one. So I don't even know what she was making that she needed this for. My point is that it's versatile, and you can use it for a bunch of things, and it comes in really handy. It's part of needing things, and being able to access them. Now,
I was going to say, I think especially in these days, finding the versatility to use your products that you buy at the store is really important. So while we are a Bloody Mary mix, we do offer several recipes online for different cocktails using different liquor other than vodka. So you can make a Michelada, which is using beer. You can make our frozen iguana, which I think uses tequila. And then we also have gazpacho recipes. So one of our accounts is a restaurant in the Carolinas, and they use our mixes as the primary base for their gazpacho.
Oh, that's a great idea, by the way. Yeah, that would be great.
Thank you.
I just got an email from you about old garnishes. You make a big deal out of garnishes. I mean, they're like half a meal.
Yes, so that seems to be the trend with Bloody Marys, that in the entire market of Bloody Marys, people love to add garnishes to their cocktails. So, as part of our trend, we love to add we love to keep up with the crowd. And also I think the mix itself stands alone as its own drink. And so whether you choose to have it as a fancy, flourished, garnished beverage or just a breakfast juice, it's quite nice.
Every time I think of the garnishes, I think of my family used to vacation in Bermuda where the Pimm's Cup was the ruling cocktail. But I remember trying to drink it, and you had to work your way through all the garnishes. It's like a whole bouquet of things on top of the drink.
Oh, yes.
So that's still a trend. I mean, it is a trend, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's beauty and simplicity, so having a standalone cocktail is quite nice. But if you're really going to go the extra mile, we have a fabulous recipe on our website that uses a little bit of spicy honey and has a whole assortment of beautiful beautiful garnishes that you can add to it. And then it does make it a little bit fun if you're entertaining with guests.
Yeah, I noticed that one actually on your website. It gets attention. you're naturally distributed. What's the best way for people to get their Bloody Mary mix, the Blondie?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
Where is it available? How do people get this?
Oh, absolutely. So that's a great question. So we offer, as one of the most direct and easy routes, we have our online website where customers can go and order our products. We also have availability through regional groceries and liquor stores in the Carolinas. We just expanded to Specs in Texas. We've just been approved for all of the Hilton Corp restaurants. So
yeah, that's
now
a
we're
biggie.
Working to it's a biggie. We're really excited about it. So now we've got to put in the legwork to find those restaurants that want to sell us. But that approval is very challenging to receive, and so we're
I was gonna say it is a challenge. I mean to move up your production in that great amount. It's a challenge. Well,
oh,
how are you
absolutely.
Gonna deal with that?
Yeah, so actually it's a funny thing. When we think about the production of our mixes or actually food production in general, we have to often forecast how many tomatoes we need to grow in order to produce the amount of mixes that are going to be requested. And so I think the average tomato lifespan is about 9 months from seedling to harvest. I think it's 9 months. It might be less than that, but or it might be from 9 months is seedling to the moment it's crushed and ready to go. And so we are always thinking ahead at all times, especially as a smaller brand with competitors like Zing Zang and V8 and McClure's who can certainly produce a lot of mix, but they're using standard beefsteak red tomatoes that are grown everywhere. We have a very specialized tomato, and that means that it's a higher quality. They're all hand-picked. The tomato itself is a very delicate tomato, and therefore it has to be hand-picked. A machine cannot pick it. And so it takes a little bit of planning on our part, but it's well worth it.
Well, but it's also, you can't control it.
Well,
that's
precisely.
Right.
I mean, that is absolutely true. So we also leverage weather and climate in order to make sure that we have farms in different geographic areas so that if, heaven forbid, there's a hurricane that blows through the farm in Florida, that we're not out an entire crop.
Yeah. So you're just taking it naturally, handling vagaries of growing fresh produce.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a core tenet of ours as a company, that we, blonde is certainly referring to our yellow tomato. But the natural part of our mix is that we do not want to use artificial preservatives. The preservative that we use is citric acid, which is lemon juice. And that is a naturally occurring preservative. So that means that the mix that you're getting is there's no junk. There's nothing added to it. There's no binders, fillers. It's all just real food. And that means that we are also working with farms that are organic or that hold to traditional high standards. And because they're hand-picked, we know that they're really processed in a nice way. You really know where your food's coming from.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a really high-quality product. I mean, that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
And that's certainly demonstrated
probably
in our MSRP.
More, right?
It does. So that's certainly demonstrated in our MSRP. We are more expensive than the standard McClure's or the standard V8 Zing Zang. But that is for a reason. You're getting a product that is real, it's genuine, it's all natural. Whereas if you look at the back of Zing Zang, I don't think I can pronounce half of the words. So.
But basically, you're rewarded by you keep winning all these competitions and so forth. Do you find resistance to the higher price or not?
Not at all. So it's interesting. We have a really dedicated base of customers who absolutely love our product, and that really shows, because they could very well go to Zing Zang and buy the same quantity for less. But I think that their willingness to pay a little extra means that they really value the product that we're serving.
Well, that's really do. Congratulations. I mean, are you planning to just sort of expand market or maintain, or what do you plan on doing in the future with this company and product?
Yeah, so we are definitely keeping our eyes open to expanding into bigger chain stores, into bigger groceries. But we also really value our face-to-face interactions with customers. So we started at farmers markets in Charleston, and we continue to grow the network of farmers markets that we're attending because we recognize that people like face-to-face interaction with the brand. It gives you a feeling of who you're working with, who you're buying from, that there's actually a real family behind the business rather than some big corporation.
Well, you're doing everything right, Samantha.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we were happy this year that we won the SIP Awards, which is a big international organization that independently and blind taste testing mixes. So we entered into the Bloody Mary category, and we won an award for that. So we're certainly gaining traction and getting some good buzz around us.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, to borrow a current political slogan, you've proven you're not going to go back. This is the new gold standard.
It is the new gold standard, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's our golden Mary.
Yes. Great. Well, I'm glad you had time to talk to us about it. And the listeners, just make a note. I'll check out the website. You might as well give us the website as well, by the way.
Absolutely.
And look out for it's a natural blondie mixes. But the website is?
The website is naturalblondemix.com. You can find us there. You can also find us on Amazon. So if that is a much more convenient way for you to shop, we're there too.
Right. Well, again, I'm glad we caught up with you, and keep rolling.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure speaking to both of you, and thank you so much for checking in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a great day.
Thank you. Could you stop the...